Hello, everyone. I'm Jasser Al-Jasser, and I'm a PhD student in University of Minnesota. And my topic today is gladiolus hybridus, breeding for rapid generation and reduced dormancy. So a little bit background. So gladiolus is a cut flower worldwide, and it's actually native to South Africa. And it's heavily been hybridized. That is, like, it's estimated to have, like, even more than 10,000 cultivars worldwide. As you can see, there's, like, it comes different colors, flower patterns, sizes. They're, like, varies in phenotypes. So going more into my research, so I'm talking about the gladiolus life cycle. So we start from seed, and once it germinates, you have a seedling. And as soon as it germinates, have a seedling, it's going to form a comb, a small one. Small or big, depends on how the plant age. And then it's going to go vegetatively to grow. And that itself going to go back. So after it's have vegetative growth, it's going to go dormant to dormancy and go back. And then break dormancy and sprout, go back dormant. And that's going to take a couple of cycles. Means coming up for a few years in a natural habitat, as well even in breeding and commercial production. So it will take a couple of years because it's a perennial. And after that, it's going to go into flowering. So it has a long juvenile period, and we're trying to reduce that with our breeding to more and more and more cut it to early flowering. So we're able to accomplish with rapid generation cycling, RGC, in gladiolus. We were able to make it skip dormancy and went straight to flowering in first year, and that with a range and from 4 to 10 months in a period. As you can see, it's a small flower because it's a juvenile that just reached flowering. It didn't have much vegetative growth. It just went straight to flowering. I always say this joke, it's like a young boy with a mustache. So that's the phenotype we have in our gladiolus. So my research objective is to breed gladiolus to reduce the juvenility from a perennial to annual. We want to just make it an annual plant from a perennial. But the second, actually, we want to make it so marketably desirable to be a potted production, because we want to make it from a gladiolus that's usually grow and sold as cut flower into a potted production plant. And the third, once you do breeding, you also always see all sorts of weird things, unique traits just come out, you know, and that's also a great thing that you can actually acquire these traits for, such as like flowering, dormancy, and the anther and stigmas. So I can't show you the parents where we start because we're filing U.S. patent, but this is just the general scheme for the breeding. So we start with parents, and through selection to early flowering, all that, we reach to RGC1, which is the first generation that's reached flowering from seed first year, and we only got 20 plants out of like 3,903. So it's very small percentage. So we select those 20, and we cross cycle one with our current selection, and we got 8 out of 311 plant, which is better in number of percentage, 2.5%. And then we tried all sorts of things. I did inbreeding for them to produce inbred, and we still got a couple plants, 11 out of 318. However, if you look at here, if I just inbred them from that generation, zero plant, over 500 plants, none of them actually had a cycle one flowering. None of them flowered first year. They flowered second year, third year, but none of them flowered first year. So we're going to this directly this path to the for first year flowering. So this is just general scheme how we're able to accomplish that. So this is the parent generation. They're able to flower from third to fourth or fifth year because it's a perennial. Through breeding, we're able to push it all the way to make them flower from the first year. Like, this is the earliest in the parent, and now we're able to accomplish make it flower from first year. And most of them, the mean The medium can be like in second year, and the low and the latest one is actually third year. So you're able to push it through harsh selection and breeding for early flowering. So in ANOVA, in here, we're comparing to three generations that flower from seed in the first year, and all of them able to flower within the first month with variation significantly. But I want you to look at here, that's the weeks till the flower. So after the day germinates, how many weeks it took to flower. So I did the ANOVA and actual tokamine separation, and the fastest was the second generation, which is the hybridization between recurrent selection with cycle 1. It's the fastest, able to reach flowering in an average 21 weeks, while when I inbred them, it got delayed because probably due to inbreed depression, it's reduced its hybrid vigor. So with that, they're the fastest in flowering, even though that's the percentage of flowering was higher in the third inbred, but the quality, they're late. So to compare visually between all the three generation, I have samples. So this is the first generation, they're open pollinated. And the second, they're able to flower faster, and also they're more visually attractive, they're more vigorously growing. While the inbred, they're just more like decline down the hill, just like similar to the RGC1, because they're inbred. So we thought we came up with the first people like to do that, but when I dig deep in the literature, all the way back to 1893, look between the lines, you have to read. So that's the first one able to report it. As much as I know, I'm still going even back further. That's someone able to witness phenomena, someone able to grow gladiolus and make them flower from seed. He didn't breed them. He actually took them from a French breeder, and he grew them. He witnessed some of them. He reported that in his published book. However, the first actual breeder who actually knows what you're doing and breed for early selection was Rumier. He's a German, and it's actually a German paper. I translate everything in Google Translation, so I understand everything, and it took me 2 days. So then he gave it to his friend, Keir. He's in U.S., and he grew them from first year. He's like gladiolus growers in U.S. He reported that, and as well as Bill, actually, he's a professor in Cornell University. He also reported that. And then Burby Company actually took those germplasm and produced their own cultivar and released it as four-tuck hybrids that flower from seeds. Notice that said most of them bloom first year. So there's a variation for that. So we also did world record that making them our first able to flower from a seed in a 12 weeks period, even faster than the German breeder who let them flower from cycle one. We able to break world record. And as you can see, they're so small, like petite. It's just like grass. And it's like first, when you look at this, like fake, but because it's like so miniature and petite that if I just lift my hand, it's going to fall. So with that, I'm going to the different topic. That it's about for comb structure. So gladiolus is part of geophyte, just like bulbs, combs, tubers. They have underground storage, and it's called comb. And comb is as a compressed stem, just like a tree. Imagine like compressed, that's a comb. And when you plant a comb, if you buy a gladiolus comb, you're going to plant it. Once it's going to flower, it's going to produce a daughter comb. So a daughter comb is going to be above the mother comb. So if you plant this one, this is the daughter one. And after it's flower, this small one, it's going to grow this big, while the mother is going to be depleted and become flat, just like in here. So it's like, think of it as a source and a sink and storage. And then it depends on the genotype and cultivation method, you're going to have cormels here. So think of it like a mother, daughter, and grandchildren there. However, they're all same genotypes. They're identical because it's vegetative propagation. So the reason why I saw that, because here I want to show you the morphological proof that we have a cycle one. So if you have a seedling, if you grow up from seed, you're going to have a comb. It's developed. It's the first year. It's going to hold a small one. It's not going to flower, just like I told you, commercially. It's going to take a couple of years, build up bigger comb, then it's flower. And if you plant it, end of the season, it's going to be like this. You have like two daughter combs, and the mother is wrinkled because it's depleted all its energy. And here as well, you have a bigger one. That's the previous flowering. This is one that's going to flower next season. And here, our cycle one, they're able to flower first year, and they don't have a daughter comb because it's the mother comb that went to flower. That's the morphological proof. There's no gladiolus able to flower first year like this. If it's going to flower, it's going to flower like that from seed directly. That's a morphological proof for you. So we also have like breeding for early germination, early flower, and that lead to reduced dormancy. So usually gladiolus has a deep dormancy, just like think of it like apple, almonds. They just go dormant in fall and winter, and in actual spring they just sprout leaves and flower. So gladiolus is just like that. You know, it's a perennial, it's senescent and sprout and then flower in the spring and summer. And that's what can happen. It can senesce and it's going to go deep dormant. Deep dormancy for 6 months in natural system. In a commercial production, they just take the comb, place it in the cooler. The cooler going to behave just like in winter. It's going to break dormancy. It's more hormonal and physiological aspect. Our germplasm, they were so superior that they don't require cooling to break the dormancy. They're just going to go straight to back sprouting. As you can see, I left this one, and I cut water from it so it's dry, and then just sprout back after like 4 weeks. So it skipped dormancy and went back to growth. Either it's going to flower or not, that's, you know, vary, but they just went growing back in a period of 4 weeks. So I grow it, you know, vegetative growth, senescence, 4 weeks, they sprout back. And that's unique, never been reported. That's all the time, all the textbook you find, gladiolus deep, they must require a cool period for vegetation to break the dormancy. But our germplasm is so superior, they're just they sprout back with having reduced dormancy trait. And I look at recurrent selection and inbred between them, and as you can see, we just have more resprout percentage than their inbred. So even with inbred versus recurrent selection, it's still superior that I have more resprout percentage. Also, we've been seeing that other features, like usually a gladiolus is just a monocot, three stigma, three anthers, just like in here, 1, 2, 3 anthers, 1, 2, 3 stigmas. But as you can see, it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 sigmas, which is unique. It just defies like monocot's perspective. And also we have seen like 5 anthers, and the stigma is like, it's like shriveled, like, you know, kind of like not even widespread, like all sorts of like unique traits we have. But it's interesting to see this because it has 4 sigma. So gladiolus have 3 carpels in the capsule, but having 4 sigma, does that mean it's have 4 carpels? Which is like, it's a unique in gladiolus. The last slide I have we also been seeing like additive effects. So this is an F1, I self-fit all of them, and now we see like variation in additive effect trait. So this is the parent, and as you can see, this is the same redness in the tip, but if it's more additive effect, it's gonna have more like here in the edges, there's more redness, while here there's no. The less additive effect is just a small tip here, expression of that red tip. And 0, which is recessive, it doesn't have anything, it's just complete yellow. And this actual phenotype pattern has never been seen with gladiolus breeders or North American Gladiolus Society Council. They never seen this state. So we're also going to file patent for this one and release it as well. So with that, we're going to commercial uses, and we're actually having goals with us. We want to reduce the juvenility period. So it's a tool. Now you see it. We are able to reduce it. Now it's going to be a tool, so it can breed it. Like imagine you have an apple tree that's going to flower first year. That's great. You can, in 10 years, mean 10 generations, just like that. That's what our hope. It's going to be a tool, as well as for garden gladiolus, because it doesn't require a cooling. It can be grown in like places such as like Florida with mild winter. It doesn't require, and it's not going to be damaged the corn. So it can keep flower, goes dormant, and keep flower, go dormant, doesn't require cooling. The third thing, once we able to identify the genes, because I'm currently working trying to identify the discover the genes, we can transfer the genes to other geophytes such as tulip and daffodil, because they also have long juvenile period. The fourth and most important one currently we're focusing on was pot production. We want to produce gladiolus for pot production. And here, that's like a regular pot tulip. We want the same thing. As you can see, they're kind of similar in its pattern, but with gladiolus. So either from a cormel or from a seed. You know, we have two sources for that. And you can only produce gladiolus spotted plant through three-way. Either from seed, as I show you, and that's like our ID type we want, or from a cormel, or you actually have a regular corm, spray it with G inhibitors, ARS, or vacarbitazole, and it's actually going to have a POTS one. But this one varies. This one varies between concentration and genotype, but these are more superior because it's easier, better for commercial production and operation. Although we're doing breeding for this one, but we're more confident in this one because they're vegetatively propagated, easier massively produced, and identical and uniform, and that's what industry want. They want a uniform height and color and all the requirements. So with that, I had to thank my university, the Able Kuwait University, to fund my PhD study, Minnesota Nursery Landscape Association for their funds, as well as Minnesota Agriculture Extension, where we did all trials. So with that, thank you so much.